to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me, as always, both of my co-hosts.
Hey, everyone, it's Nick Morris.
And Roger Stillian.
Boys, how are you doing this weekend? Did you guys enjoy Friday the 13th?
I did. I didn't do a Friday the 13th marathon, which is unusual, but Jason's always with me in my heart.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, sorry.
I didn't do a Friday the 13th marathon either, mostly because those movies are ass. So I did play the terrible, terrible Friday the 13th game with some of my Xbox buddies for a couple hours on Friday night because we had to.
Is it really that bad? I've heard mixed things.
It's okay. If you're playing with people you know, it can be really fun. Mm-hmm. As with most games, when you're playing with somebody you know, because you just make fun of each other the whole time. But it's not a great game. But it was $24 well spent, I think.
Yeah. For an evening on Friday.
Yeah, get some time with your homies.
Sure. That's
right. That's right.
All right. Well, I'm glad everyone enjoyed the Friday the 13th. We have another one in July, and then that's the last one for a while. So enjoy the next one in July. But that's going to be the last one for a while, so enjoy it. I said the same thing twice. Wonderful. All right.
Good. Mm-hmm. Professional.
Also, the rains have come. You guys saw that?
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, it's funny. People were talking about the rains. Like, is it rain come yet? Like, what? It's rain. Guys, we've had rain before. It's fine.
It's April, man. It rains here.
It's not like...
Exactly. Just like people freak out when it snows in November.
It's not like it's...
Snows
here. Winter's coming. Like, yeah. Not like white waters are coming.
Yeah, this is the end.
It's rain. Jeez.
Yeah, it's rain.
All right. As always, getting into the box office, some interesting shakeup this week. We were just talking about before we hit record. Number one, Rampage. It wasn't number one until...
This morning, when they finally did some recalculation, like around 10 o'clock this morning, and Rampage slid in front of Quiet Place.
Well, just real quick, look at the numbers. The weekend gross for Rampage is 34.5. Weekend gross for Quiet Place is 32.6.
Okay, so push a little bit further.
It wasn't that big of a deficit, so... that's not terrible, actually. But number one, Rampage, as you probably could have guessed, The Rock leads that one.
World's most bankable star.
World's most bankable star in, like, 17,000 movies a year.
Yeah.
Minus 16,995.
Dude, probably. I just saw that, like, another movie of his is coming out in September, not the Skyscraper movie. Like, there's...
Really?
Yeah, like, he's got that Skyscraper one that comes out this summer, and then something else in September. I don't remember what it was, but I'll look it up. But I was like, how, dude? He's literally pushing out, like, six movies a year.
I'm sure he has.
Dude's
I'm
an
sure
animal.
He picks and chooses.
In, oh, insane yeah. work ethic, right? Probably. I mean,
yeah.
He still has Ballers on HBO,
which is an incredible show, by the way.
Yeah.
He's doing all right. He's not hurting for any money.
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee you that. But so the budget for Rampage, $120 million. It's already grossed a worldwide $148, which is pretty good. Foreign $114, domestic $34. I can see how foreign audiences would
do. Dude, they love that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
everything.
Then we'll be talking about that one next week. Very excited. Love The Rock. Number two, A Quiet Place, as you probably could have guessed. $17 million budget. But get this, boys. You're going to be proud of this one. This is like another split, another Get Out. So off of $17 million budget, in 2 weeks, $151
million.
$100 million
plus, man.
So last week I said $200 million, and you said no chance. It might actually hit $200 million.
I didn't think about it, but of course that was before I'd seen the movie, too. So
it is quite fantastic.
We're going to talk about that today.
But the interesting part is the domestic gross is 99, the foreign gross is 51, almost literally half. So I find that to be interesting. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt. I tell you what, because this movie, John Krasinski has if I want to make that movie, I want to make that movie card. He has one of those. Mm-hmm. So... we'll see where that goes. Talk about that one a little later. Truth or Dare, Blumhouse's Truth or Dare, $3.5 million budget, worldwide $21 million. They've already made their money back times 10. So, well, not times 10, times, you know, 5, whatever.
It's a lot of money.
It is, but I'm sure they're happy with the box office. And if it does a little more, I'm sure they're even just a little more happy about that. Ready Player One, number 4. No official budget given, worldwide of $474. Think it'll hit 500?
Well, maybe, but it's got to be making money now.
as soon as Avengers comes out, gone.
It's going to keep rolling it in.
I think it'll hit 5, maybe 550. And number 5, Blockers, one of the ones, the other one we're talking about this week, $21 million budget, worldwide gross of 52. I was pleasantly surprised when I saw it making so much money because I saw it, I laughed a lot. We're going to talk about it a little later, but I had a good time in this movie. Mm-hmm. I really did. What about you, Roger?
Oh, I had some really funny moments.
Super excited about talking about that.
Someone.
Yeah. Number six, Black Panther, still in the top six. Good for it. No official budget given. $1.3 billion. Not a million, boys. Billion.
Whew. That's awesome.
Yeah. That movie's going to continue to roll in the money. Definitely. They said that... Sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thumb. They said that the Blu-ray and DVDs go on sale May 13th, and the week prior, May 8th, is right around Avengers. The digital copies go on sale.
Yeah, because of Avengers. I saw that this morning. And I'm surprised that they're not pushing it to come out before Avengers.
You'd have thought that
Two days before. Yeah, I thought, you know, Avengers comes out on the 27th. Let's make sure we hit the 25th and get that extra push.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know.
Maybe you know what I thought would have been a good idea? And I think we even talked about it in like an episode, two episodes ago, is if they put out like a bare bones, just the movies, no extra features, just like, here's a Blu-ray with all 18 movies, you know, $7,500, so you can get caught up. You think they'd want to do that?
But telling you, man, just wait. Just wait. Do all of them. Make them 4K. Make it $250.
Do you think that would sell?
Yes.
Do you think enough people have 4K TVs to matter?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Every big movie like that, just give them all a steelbook and go.
I love my
no, that's your thing,
I love my Best Buy steelbooks. Love them.
Give them all a steelbook and have them just go.
All right. Steelbook Central. Yes, please. Number seven, Isle of Dogs. One of the movies we didn't take a look at, but it's doing quite well. No budget given. Worldwide, $27 million. I just said quite well. I said it's not quite well. $27 million worldwide. Domestic total is actually much higher than the foreign total, but I can understand that given Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
So
because he's a weirdo.
Well, the man makes good movies, though.
I won't argue that. He's a weird dude.
He's a weird dude, but he's kind of like The Rock, and he just, like, one movie a year, one every 2 years, like, he just... makes tons of movies, so he doesn't stop.
I mean, that's all right. You got to keep doing something. Very true. Like we talked about last time, like he's got his own little crew of people he works with, so he knows if he's got a good script or whatever, he can just have them come on up and be like, "Yep, we're doing this." And you know, 6 months later, there's a movie coming out, so it's just something to look at.
All right, number eight. I Can Only Imagine. I am very surprised that that an Easter movie is still in the top 10. You know, 2 weeks after Easter.
Jeez. Especially because this movie seems like it's, you know, only certain people are going to go watch it and enjoy it.
It definitely does have a very specific audience.
Yeah.
You know, I would be surprised if anyone under the age of 25 is still watching this.
Mm-hmm.
Its audience is very streamlined, and it knows exactly who it's targeting. I'm sure those people are still watching it, but...
I don't know, you think it's pulling like a semi-Tyler Perry-ish crowd? Or it's the same group of people that they're catering those kind of movies to, and they have we talked about stuff like that. They have followings, man. People come and look at that stuff, or they watch those movies, so, I don't know.
That's very true. I agree with you, Roger, on that.
Wouldn't be crazy to think of, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The interesting... I like this $7 million budget. You guys want to take a guess at how much it's made?
Has it cleared 100 yet?
74.
Ooh.
That's not bad at
10
all.
10 times his budget, man.
I'm sure the producers are just beside themselves with that number. Tyler Perry's Acrimony, number 9. Not a strong start, not even a strong finish. No budget given, $38 million worldwide. If you've seen the trailer, and if you're familiar with Pittsburgh, all the exteriors were shot in Pittsburgh. So if you're a local guy here in Pittsburgh or the surrounding area, even just do yourself a favor, check out the trailer. It's always cool to see places you've been to and seen with your own two eyes as, you know, as the exterior for a film. I've always thought so anyway.
Sure.
All right. Moving right along. And number 10, rounding us out, Chappaquiddick. I'm actually surprised to the top 10. No budget given. Just done $11 million. That's not great.
I don't understand why this movie came out when it did. I mean, I can't say that same stuff over and over again.
I know we talked
about this,
but when would you have put it out? Given the same lineup that is now and...
I don't know, September?
Probably a good time.
Late August, where movies don't have an expectation of money and not a whole lot of stuff comes out at that time. So if you show up and throw up a movie like Chappaquiddick, it's been out for 2 weeks, you'll be like, oh, I'll put in $11 million. Okay, cool. Yeah, not that it's getting buried by I Can Only Imagine.
Yeah.
Come on, dude.
And I Love Dogs.
Right.
Which isn't even playing wide.
No.
Just some interesting ones to round out the top 20. Pacific Rim Uprising number 14, Wrinkle in Time 15, Love, Simon still holding strong at 16, and we have Tomb Raider 19, Peter Rabbit. Peter Rabbit is still in the top 20.
Still pulling 20. Oh, I wanted to ask, before you close the mojo list, is Jumanji still on there?
Jumanji.
Good question.
No, it's gone.
No, okay. No longer tracking Jumanji, okay? Yeah, yeah. Just wanted to see.
I don't see
if it get that creep to
at
a billion.
At least for this week, it was not on the top 41.
Okay.
So that's not even... Going any further is just like kind of.
Yeah, I don't know nothing to worry about. I mean, it's not even clearing a couple hundred thousand bucks. Yeah, so.
But dude, it made its money.
I'm sure, but I was just anxious to see where it ended up.
All right, so that means if you are keeping track and if you're excited about some movies, this past weekend came Overboard, Truth or Dare, and Rampage came out. This coming weekend, this Friday, a big day for a lot of people: Super Troopers 2, Duck Duck Goose, I Feel Pretty, Dolphins. April 27th, Avengers Infinity War, and Traffic and Animal Crackers.
Oh, whoa, we talked about this. You don't say anything else.
Okay, that's fair. I can understand that. That is definitely Avengers Infinity War week. And for probably the weeks, I'm going to get to that in a minute. But May 4th, Overboard opens wider. May 11th, Life of the Party, Breaking In. That's 2 weeks after Avengers. They might fare okay.
No, I would just would have been like, you don't say anything else comes out until Deadpool on the 18th, and that would be it.
Deadpool, do you think Avengers is going to hurt Deadpool's income?
I doubt it.
Yeah. I mean, that's three weeks away?
It's 3 weeks, but...
3 weeks in between.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure Avengers will still be making money, but...
Yeah.
I feel like anyone who's gone and seen that movie in the theaters...
Yeah, the peak audience for Avengers will have dipped by then, and right in time for those same people to come back and see Deadpool.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what it is. It's hard when you push movies that close together.
Mm-hmm. I feel pretty, unfortunately, as funny as it might be, for as good as Amy Schumer can be, they should have just taken a hit, saved it, and then just brought it out some other time.
I mean, they bumped it up 1 week, though. I mean, they already moved.
That's not going to help them. They got one week of income, and then... And it's dead completely.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're looking at that's the complete opposite audience. I don't know.
It's hard to tell sometimes what they're thinking, but I would have definitely kept it back. That means if you are excited about 1 week, well, actually, when this posts, you have till Friday till Super Troopers comes out. You have 2 weeks, just 2 weeks, to watch how many movies, Roger? If you're trying to catch up.
I'm going to talk about that, but it's 18, so.
18. Oh, God.
That's insane. It's more than two movies a day, isn't it?
It's one and a half.
One and a half movies a day, yeah. 3 weeks for Overboard. 4 weeks, Life of the Party, which actually looks funny. Melissa McCarthy, I think she can bring her own audience. And Deadpool is now on the radar. Deadpool 2, 5 weeks away. People are really excited about that. Now, I wanted to ask you, I was thinking about today, we talk about Super Troopers 2 being a cult classic, and we'll go into this more next week, but what about Anchorman?
Well, the second Anchorman is not good.
That's my point. Mm-hmm. It was so long, and we got a second Anchorman, and it just... But... What if Super Troopers is not good? Is it just going to go the way of Anchorman if it's not good? Just make no money and just slip away quietly? Well, actually, Anchorman 2 made tons of money.
It made a ton of money.
I mean, it was a revamping of Anchorman, you know? It has the same feeling a little bit, but it is what it is. It's Will Ferrell's comedy stylings.
I'm worried about Super Troopers. I'm genuinely worried about it.
I mean... That's the fact that we have to worry about. You know?
Yeah, it's something you have to worry about with every sequel.
And
it comes out
a week before Avengers. That's the same audience it's targeting. Like, the same audience.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't... They don't worry about Avengers money because they know everything's getting sucked up.
Mm.
It's like, you worry about sequels in general. I mean, I worry about Deadpool. Stuff like that. I mean, yes, it's been a long time since the first Super Troopers movie, but... You know, you worry about, is it the same jokes? Is it going to be the same cliches over and over again?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I worry about that in modern sequels.
Yeah, that's true. Sequels that come like a year later, they're like, well-timed.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, it's been 2 years, let's pump out a movie, blah, blah, blah. And hey, maybe it's great, maybe it's terrible, I don't know.
Yeah. But, I mean, granted, going back to what you just said, Roger, about, you know, having the same jokes as they did in the first movie, I mean, you can tell in the trailer that a person they pull over, the meow... You know,
oh yeah,
that's definitely the same kind of thing. Maybe mm-hmm. they're messing with him again, or
well, I mean, there's got to be some callbacks. Yeah, there has to be just to placate your audience, mm-hmm. but you can't do that and have it be the only jokes.
Yeah,
you know,
very true.
Just one of those things where you have to look at it and be like, I don't know, man, it was funny, but if they'd have done it this a little bit different, it's just the one thing that makes Super Troopers. The original one, such a cult classic, is it really was really original.
Yeah.
It was.
Crazy original.
Mm-hmm. It had a good cast.
It did. It was strong. Everybody, every person, every character they played fit.
Yeah.
So
even Brian Cox, you know, they all really, it was a good mixture. I just think the sequel's too late.
And we'll see.
We will see indeed. So, yeah. So that's if you're excited about stuff coming out, that's what it is. Just a few weeks away from almost anything. And looking at trailers, Animal Crackers. I don't know if you guys got a chance to check this out. Get a good chance you got Animal Crackers.
Sure.
Directed by Tony Bancroft and Scott Christian Saba. I think it looks kind of fun. It is Emily Blunt, Danny DeVito, John Krasinski. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt together again.
Hey, mm-hmm. In real life, because they're married.
Stop breaking my heart. Stop
that stake into your heart.
Stop breaking. Oh, man, Emily Blunt was my Hollywood crush, and now she's just been cast aside. Whatever. I actually am really excited about this movie. It's got a huge cast. As I said, Emily Blunt, Danny DeVito, John Krasinski, Ian McKellen, Sylvester Stallone, Patrick Warburton, Tara Strong, James Arnold Taylor. It just goes on. I'm really excited about that.
That's a strong voice cast.
Yeah, very. Extremely strong voice cast. Especially with Ian McKellen. Like, you can, mm-hmm. I mean, if he's voicing, I mean...
You know what other movie has really strong voice cast?
What?
Sherlock Gnomes.
No, stop.
Oh, God.
You have a thing for Sherlock Gnomes.
Hey, man. We still haven't reviewed it on this podcast. And I know at least one of us at this table has seen it. So...
You know what? Next week will be the official review of Sherlock Gnomes.
All right.
Nice. Animal Crackers is about a family who inherits a kind of a rundown has-been circus and is able to revitalize it through the use of animal crackers. When they eat an animal cracker, they turn into something for a short time. It looks comical. It looks like a lot of fun. I get kind of a Leap vibe from it. Nick, we talked about Leap.
Mm-hmm.
So
Animal Crackers does look pretty cool. I mean, there's a little magic involved. But and it does kind of have the same feeling of Leap. It's kind of meshing together a happy story, but in a broken way.
Yeah, that's kind of what a lot of animated movies do. Mm-hmm. A lot of Disney movies. It's a ways away. It's got kind of a. It's doesn't come out till August, so we have some time on that. But I just wanted to. Just talk about that for a brief second. I'm kind of really excited about it. I gotta be honest about it.
I want to know where they get animal crackers that actually look like real animals.
Why do you... Of all the things in the trailer, that's the question you have?
I mean, that's a question about animal crackers in general. Have you had an animal cracker lately? I have a kid, man. We have those in my house. Not a single one of those looks like a real animal.
It's very true.
Like, they don't like elephants and giraffes?
No. They look like blobs.
It's been a
like,
while
frosted animal crackers are just literally like icing caked on, yeah. Like, little squarish things. So, don't tell me. You'd be like, you eat this, you become this. No. No, I don't know what animal that is.
Liars. All of them. Moving on to... Ooh, continuing our animated streak for trailers, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Guys, come on. Everyone's excited about this one.
This directly into my veins.
Yes.
I need this.
I agree. I'm super excited about it, Wreck-It Ralph 2. The first one was not a disappointment at all. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I loved it a lot. It is directed by Phil Johnston and Rich Moore, John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, Jack Brayer, Jane Lynch, Ed O'Neill, Anna Ortiz, Rich Moore, and Dina Menzel. That's a hell of a voice cast as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's better than Animal Crackers, arguably.
Wreck-It Ralph making his way to the App Store.
I love the last scene with the... If you've seen the trailer, when they copy one of the very popular app, and they're giving the milkshake to one creature, and the pancakes to the cat, and then... What's her face comes out? I forget. What was the name? The girl's name in Wreck-It Ralph.
Vanellope.
Penelope, that's right. She comes entire tray of pancakes. They keep Ralph keeps feeding the cat to the cat. And then this little girl's watching it on an iPad. Ralph feeding all these pancakes to this cat, and then the cat explodes, and the girl yells. I think that scene looks so funny.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure you're going to watch that.
I love the first Wreck-It Ralph. I think it's fantastic. It's one of the best things Disney has done on their own animated side because it's not a Pixar movie. So it's one of the better ones they've ever done.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And seeing things like that, I always wondered after Wreck-It Ralph if that ever meant that Disney and Pixar would split up because Disney was like, hey, we can do it ourselves. We don't have to pay you X amount of billions to do it, but now they've just gone on and bought everything else, so that's not happening.
I'm a little worried for their streaming service only because I feel like it's going to be expensive.
Dude, they might buy Fox.
Oh, man.
Who cares?
If they buy Fox, then nothing is to stop them from buying every other studio on the planet, except studios being firm and saying no, which may or may not happen. I know that AMC recently has bought up a lot of the movie theater chains, but there are a few, one local marquee, who refuses to be part of that family, so, but with the right check, put the right number there, you put someone in front of someone.
Just keep adding zeros.
Adding zeros, keep adding digits, you know, I don't know what it's going to take. But
money talks, man.
Disney is a force to be reckoned with these days. We'll see how that goes. All right, moving on. Future World, directed by James Franco and Bruce Thierry Cheng. James Franco, Mila Jovovich, Lucy Liu, Method Man, Snoop Dogg. What do you guys think?
It's interesting.
It has a Mad Max / what's the movie Denzel?
Book of Eli.
The Book of Eli, yeah. Kind of vibe to it.
Okay, I never actually thought about that, but yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah. With this, I don't know, it might be cool, has real potential to be awful.
It really does.
With James Franco being involved, I don't think it'll be awful. He's, I think, got a better eye than most.
He is also a weirdo.
But I mean, he's also got, he's got money, he's got influence, he's got a whole gang of people he works with all the time.
Very artistic person.
He just did Disaster Artist.
Is that a nice way to say he's a weirdo?
No, I'm a huge fan of James Franco. It's just, he's interesting, you know, I mean. And this movie is interesting in itself. Through the trailer, we see, you know, obviously it's this post-apocalyptic world where everyone's trying to live. But
generally people do.
Yeah. now we're seeing, are they robot? Are they robots or, like, are they people? I mean, there's people and then there's people that can be influenced by some type of injection or...
I think that's like what they are is being kept under wraps right now.
Yeah.
But it's got kind of, it also has kind of like a Blade Runner vibe to it. Mm-hmm. Like people living next to replicants. And Blade Runner, the replicants here, I don't know what they'll be called, but has kind of that vibe going out to it.
Be awesome if they just called them replicants. Just blatantly steal things from other movies.
Or Terminators.
Yeah, right.
Jesus.
Yep.
I mean, why not, right?
Right.
I don't really have much to say about that one, except it's kind of far off. But
was there a date on that one? I don't even know.
No,
I don't think so.
It on the trailer. So I don't know how to think about that one. It's got Mila Jovovich, and she's been in some really crappy movies. Like, most of her filmography is awful. So
yeah, but she's got a niche, man. She's got her. She'll do weird sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what she does. She doesn't care.
But she has a lot of the.
Fifth Element. That's Kate Beckinsale.
Fifth Element.
Fifth Element, super weird movie.
Mm-hmm. Ultraviolet, which was fucking awful.
Was that her?
Only movie I've ever left in the movie theater. I've gone down and walked out. The only movie I've ever walked out of. That movie was terrible.
No. She likes to make weird movies, too.
Okay.
And she's married to the guy who makes Resident Evil, right? Paul W.S. Anderson, or?
I don't know.
I think she's married to that guy. Maybe I'm wrong. I know she was one time.
Is that why she kept doing the movies?
I don't know. Maybe I read that wrong. A flag in my head is going up in that is there married, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But check out those trailers. If nothing else, at least you get to see what's coming. And
hold on. I don't want to interrupt you. It just popped in my head, though, something I asked about, like, Future World, because it doesn't have any kind of date on it. It doesn't say, like, summer or fall or whatever. Like, that annoys me in trailers. Not that you have to have a specific date locked down, but give me a season.
Summer 2019.
Yeah.
I even prefer, like, November 2018.
Sure.
I prefer that.
That's fair. But, I mean, even if it said fall 18, or if, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm exactly. Good with that. Yeah.
You know what movie we're going to start to see big ones? It's going to say November 2018 is Frozen 2. Is that coming out this year? Isn't that this year?
Is that this year? I don't know.
Well, the Olaf thing, they wouldn't put that Olaf thing
out. No, that's not this year, is it? They'd be cramming it in your face already, dude.
That's true. I feel like that's what it would do, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was this year.
I feel like that. Well, I don't know. Disney
has
a lot of...
No, it says 2019.
Oh, okay. So we're still at least a year and some months away from that.
I mean, Disney has a lot of movies to push.
Didn't we hate that Olaf thing?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, it made me... Like, okay... If you haven't seen Coco, see it. It's amazing.
Coco's fantastic.
But, like, by the time that thing ended, I was like, dude, if Coco's bad, I'm going to be upset.
Yeah.
Because, like, it just set this vibe that, like, this might be terrible.
Yeah. Well, Coco itself was every bit of an hour and 50 minutes, and that itself was, like, it was, 27
it was,
minutes.
It was, like, yeah, it was 20 plus.
And they ended up cutting it, like, 2 weeks.
Two or three weeks after.
Two or 3 weeks into it.
I guarantee so many people just... You know, either emailed or someone got through to someone. They're like, "Hey, let's pull this," because no one's happy about
it. They need to. Pixar does it right with the short before, like the five, six minute shorts. Those are okay.
And those are completely fine. When you're talking almost half an hour,
well, Disney can't be trusted with their own computer animated things.
I don't agree with that statement wholeheartedly, but I see where you're coming from.
Like they. Why, dude, okay, if that wasn't a blatant cash grab, I don't know what was. Because
it's awful. It is terrible. And they had to know that. I mean, visually it was stunning.
Sure, great. Looks great. You know, it sucked.
Yeah, it did nothing to further the plot. I told Nick, I would have preferred, if it's going to be its own thing, maybe we walk into the events of Frozen 2, like we get introduced to the villain, we get introduced to the plot a little bit, and like that would be kind of a cool, maybe that would be a trend that... animated movies are going to pick up, and then like bigger, huge AAA titles we're going
to
pick up.
You mean like the reverse Marvel stinger? Instead of having something all the way at the end, you start throwing in snippets of a movie before it even comes out in front of another movie?
I mean
that'd be bold. That. Like, that would be real bold. Plot points coming out for a movie.
Well, movies have to change if they're going to survive. We've known that for years. It's no different. They really do have to do something to change it because people just aren't going to movies like they used to. Like, not at all.
Yeah.
So... I don't know how you change that.
Thank you, MoviePass.
MoviePass is a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's getting people, it's getting the numbers there, but now people are, now whatever service comes out that's more than $10, people are like, I don't want that. $10 is what I want to pay. I want to watch as many movies as I want.
I didn't even pay that. I got it was on sale for $6.97 or $6.95.
Did you have to pay it all at one time, though?
I did.
Which is still not a big deal.
Dude, I spent $80-some
for
365 movies.
Like, not even like rentals, like on a digital, but like big screen.
That's right.
Yeah.
365 movies. Yeah. I had to pay like an $11 processing fee too. So for $100, okay.
Yeah, that's worth it, man. But wait, so have you used it yet?
I did. I've used it multiple times.
It's like stealing money. It's like stealing. And then it's just
it
like,
feels weird. Like you walk in, you load it up. And you load it up and you walk in, and you're like, yep, I need one ticket for this. And you hand them your card, swipe. And a little ticket prints out and they tell you where to go.
I know AMC is really against it. Although they're not rejecting it, they're trying to get you not to use your stubs. A lot of people have stubs rewards because they're saying it's not your money. I'm very against that because, like, what do you care? If I'm giving you money, who cares where it's coming from?
Yeah, why do you care? I mean, your money for your ticket.
How is that different than. Okay, if you put the MoviePass here, and if you, for some reason, have your mother's debit card, what's the difference there? Nope. It's still not your money.
No, yeah. If I found $10 outside of a movie theater and walked in and paid with it, you're going to take that $10.
Yeah, very true.
There's more to this. I've done research. I can't. What it boils down to me, and I don't want to talk about this for so long. We have two more movies to talk about, but it seems to me like when MoviePass came out, maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago, AMC said, we should have done that.
Yeah.
Like, we could have got $20 or $30 a month, but now they can't because no one's going to pay it because $10 is
now. Yeah, if AMC comes out and it's anything, it's a dime more than $9.99.
They might be able to get away with $14.99, but that's even pushing it because that's the model. We all have Spotify, or most people have either Spotify or Pandora, which is what, $10 a month to listen to anything you want, which is the same model really.
Yeah.
You know, you have Netflix, you have Hulu, you have Amazon, which Amazon Prime breaks down to about $10 a month. So like $10 is the model. So like you can't, you do something more, you're just going to risk people like, who the hell are you to tell me that? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. One last thing I'll say about it. If somebody else does put out a service like this, all you're going to do is ostracize every person who bought a MoviePass, and they're not going to buy your service.
Mm-hmm.
And there are millions of people with a MoviePass.
As of... like 9 months ago, there was 2 million, but now there's got to be up.
It has to be climbing.
It has to be like daily, like 10,000 people a day have to be crazy fast. Anyway, so I don't want to get too much into that, here in the near future, I think there's going to be a major play with MoviePass. Either it's going to fail in the next 3 months, or they're going to do something else that just makes it better.
They're
expanding. One big thing going to come. So, guys, Blockers. I know Roger, you watched it. Nick, you did not have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good. You have an outside perspective, so we can go with that.
Good. I'm going to drop some knowledge bombs.
I really enjoyed Blockers. To me, it's one of those movies that, like, I knew I was going to watch for two reasons. I love silly comedies, and I love MoviePass. Mm-hmm. So with MoviePass, it's one of the movies I don't have to think twice about watching because it's free to me anyway.
Yeah.
Money I've already paid, you know, whatever. But so that having said that, Rob, how do you feel about it?
Okay, so I like Blockers. I don't like it as much as a lot of people who reviewed it. I don't like it as much as a lot of people I've seen it with.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I have negatively about Blockers is almost every major joke is in the trailer.
Oh.
At least parts of it. Now, there are very funny moments that come out of these, because obviously trailers are edited, whatever. But just about every scene in that trailer is your movie.
Yeah. Well, there's more to it. Like, for instance, when she... I noticed when I watched it, there were, I think, like 25... I tried to get a quick head count. 25, 30 people in there. And when she... When they are looking at the computer, and you saw in the trailer, they're like, he's like, eggplant is dick and teenage emoji. And then the next thing is she's like, let's cock block these motherfuckers. Like, that was supposed to be a funny line, and because of the trailer, it wasn't.
It wasn't. Mm-hmm.
At all.
It definitely zapped it away.
So one of the bad things about having, if you have a funny trailer, that's great, but if all your funny parts are in the trailer.
Yep. It's going to ruin the movie.
Well, I don't think
it doesn't ruin it. No, I'm not saying it ruins it.
Takes
but
away.
You won't laugh where they want you to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are built-in laugh comedy, spots. Yeah.
I actually thought John Cena was one of the weaker parts of this movie.
I don't know, though. Like I told you guys before we started, I thought he has the strongest interaction of anybody in this movie.
We'll get to that. But so we start out with three girls all starting school together, and they're all scared, but they all meet in front of the school, and they hold hands going to school, and their parents are John Cena and Leslie Mann, and who's the other one? I forget his name. I'm going to look that up real quick. One second. Ike Barinholtz. He's wonderful.
Oh, yeah, he's the best part of this movie.
By far the best part
of this movie. I would love to go drink with this guy.
Absolutely. So they become friends, and then we fast forward when they're all...
All three kids meet first day of school.
Yeah, then they hold hands going in, and then their parents become friends, although they kind of don't like Hunter Ike Barinholtz from the beginning, which is hilarious.
Because he's kind of a scumbag.
But that's the thing is...
He's the best.
He is the best.
That's awesome.
They become friends, too, and then we fast forward 18 years. They're going to the prom. We're all grown up. Marriages have ended. Some marriages have ended. Others have started. Mainly Hunter's... wife has divorced, they've gotten divorced, but she is just as big a tool as he is.
Oh, yeah, she's a douche.
Let's be honest about that. His ex-wife is an awful person, too. But the one redeeming quality she has is she's married to Hannibal Buress.
Oh.
Frank
Hannibal Buress, who's like the nicest guy in the world who just gets crapped on.
I love when their daughter's coming down the stairs and he's got the phone out trying to take a picture. He's like, I just took a picture of myself. How do I stop doing this? He's like, he's taking pictures.
Oh, God.
Well, no, and then when they're outside the limo, and he's like, God damn it, you've taken 12 selfies, Frank.
And no pictures of
not a single picture of them outside of the limo. He's just snapping selfies.
That's part of the magic of the movie. If you don't pay attention to what people are saying, you'll miss
Oh, yeah, there are real comedy gems that they try to just push off for, like, a bigger slapstick comedy. And I think that hurts this movie a little bit. I do.
Well, yes and no. It's a lot of comedy doesn't work. Like I was laughing at times I wasn't supposed to, and then not laughing at times that the director really wanted you to laugh.
I laughed at some of the absolute awkward interactions between humans in this movie.
Those are the best kind of interactions.
Yeah, but those were the funniest. Like, but that's what you mean.
Give me an example of one you really liked.
I mean, there are some where we talked about this beforehand. The voice, their faces they're making when somebody will be having a conversation in front of the camera and there's somebody's watching from beyond and just like waving his hands up in the air like, what the hell? Yeah. They're like, don't do that. Like, those are funny.
Those are funny. As a matter of fact, there's one time when they're talking about how they're going to stop their kids from having the sex pact, or having losing their virginity on prom night, is when John Cena's character,
Mitch,
and Leslie Mann are... Mitchell and Lisa are talking, and Ike is sitting there. Sorry, Hunter is sitting down, and they're talking to each other, kind of angry. And he's just turning his head, like making the facial expression of what their words are saying. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was, I was so close to peeing myself at that moment. I was laughing so hard, I was rolling in my chair because that's the funniest part. And no one else was laughing, and I couldn't figure out why. Am I the one?
They don't understand. Okay, that's okay, supposed that's to be hilarious.
But that was one of the funniest moments. In the beginning, when just after you see the girls go into the school as friends holding hands, is we come back to them and they're 18, and they're like all meeting in front of the school again, a school, and this is exactly like what I think is so funny, because it's like as kids now they don't care about anything. Is one girl like not in a crosswalk, just walks across the street and a car almost hits her. Almost drills her.
She doesn't even look up.
Like she would have been dead. And the guy stops, like, what are you doing? Like, there's no crosswalk here. You can't just... And then, like, she just smiles at her friends like, I almost died. Like, like completely oblivious to what just almost
happened. Like, literally, she almost died.
And they just keep laughing about it. The Olive Garden comment I thought was awesome.
When they're about having the anniversary of their virginity, when we'll meet up for Olive Garden, they're like, high five, breadsticks, bitch. Woo!
Of course, it means more to me. I do part-time work at Olive Garden, but yeah, breadsticks, hashtag breadsticks forever.
That was funny things. I also thought it was weird. One of the things, as a parent, like, I look at this going, these are terrible people. Like, the parent... I mean, listen, I always figure when I'm older, like, I'll be a cool dad, which is probably the complete opposite of what I'll be. But if I had a chance to read my kids' text messages, I'd be like, dude, this is not right.
This is wrong.
Kids today...
It's because it's not. It's it's not... That's what I have such a problem with this. Like, as I'm watching this movie, and obviously I know this is a comedy, this is not a documentary, you're supposed to suspend some belief here, but I'm watching this movie going... Nobody would put themselves in this situation.
Well, that's the thing, is I think you're wrong. I was really thinking about that, and I'm at a disadvantage here from you. I don't have a kid, but I can imagine if I did, I would want to know what they're doing, who they're hanging out with.
Okay, that's fair. Mm-hmm. But what they do in this movie, you don't look at it going, why? Why do this? Like, if you were really that worried about where your kids are, call the cops.
Well,
but no, you know what? Okay, I'm sorry. That's weird. I don't know. Let's fall into a hotel room. You know, where they may or may not be losing their virginity. What sounds more weird?
Let me just knock on this door.
Or no, let's be John Cena's character and kick open 12 consecutive. Dude, that's what he does. That's what he does. That happens in this movie.
And then throw a 17-year-old kid through a desk.
Because you're right. Because me calling the cops, that's weird. Shouldn't do that.
Wow.
Or one of the awkward situations is Leslie Mann's character ends up under the bed in which her daughter is about to lose her virginity.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
While it's happening.
That's the most awkward thing in the world. And I look at that going, why is this? No. No. No.
Which I think one of the other funny scenes. We'll get to it eventually, but you're right. And the one thing that I like Ike Barinholtz's character Hunter for is he is adamantly against this. Like, he's like, no, guys, just let them have their night. We're not snooping. Mm-hmm. And he's actually the more interesting character. And I think one of the biggest misses here is, yes, he's kind of a tool bag. He is...
But he's relatable.
He is relatable. He's the only relatable parent in this freaking movie.
Is he kind of like maybe a voice of reason?
No, he's not that.
He's kind of the opposite.
So his character story, for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, is he's the parent... He's the divorced parent of, what's her name? What's the one girl's name? Is it Sam?
Sam.
Yeah.
Sam, yes.
Yeah, it's Sam. Sam's dad, mom and dad are divorced, been divorced a while. Sam's dad, Ike, what's his name in the movie?
Hunter.
Hunter cheated on his mom, on her mom or whatever, and I guess it was a messy divorce, like a bad messy divorce. And everybody instinctively... says that Hunter's the bad guy and blah, blah, blah. And there's this big scene where he pours his heart out later, and I won't ruin that because it's actually very funny. One of the funniest parts is not in the trailer. He pours his heart out, and you find out that maybe he's not really such a bad guy. Listen, he's not a good guy. Mm-hmm. No, he's not a good guy, but he's not quite the piece of crap everybody thinks he is. And that's what makes him relatable, because he's the most real character in this.
He is.
Like Lisa, Leslie Mann's character, terrible person. John Cena's character.
She just, I don't think moms are like that anymore. Maybe they used to be, but now it's like, get the hell out of my house.
No, oh, see, I don't even know about that, but it's like, you look at that going, no, man, that's not, no.
Or she's too much of a mom. Hmm. She's too protective. Hmm. She's too like, you're not going to go to college, you're going to stay with me forever.
Yep.
So,
oh, wow.
I mean, it's kind of a weird dynamic there, but I didn't think that...
Well, that's the whole problem with this movie, Nate. Mm-hmm. It's not they're going to lose their virginity, not all of it. Like, they're going away to college soon. Like, yeah. That's also part of the real problem with this movie.
They touch on some themes, for example. it takes place after what Roger thinks is the funniest moment in this movie is someone says, our kids told us where they're going to be. Why didn't your kids tell you? And then that kind of doesn't go anywhere as far as thematically. It does because there's no trust there, but I don't think they ever revisit that like they should. One of the big misses of this movie, as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah, the one couple or the one family has such open communication, and the other ones are spying on their kids, trying to figure out what they're doing.
Yeah, what they're doing, who they're doing it with.
That's right.
They're being safe and
sure.
And I love John Cena's. he hates the guy that his daughter is going to prom with. And he's kind of like, he has a stupid haircut. And then later, when he sees someone who looks just like him and goes and like puts his hand on his shoulder and spins him around, he's like, look, dickhead. He's like, they're like, that's on him. He's like, two of you guys have the same stupid haircut?
Yeah, that's funny.
Wow.
Hilarious.
And they do make a lot of haircut references in this movie, especially to John Cena's haircut, because he's got the John Cena haircut. It's high and tight, like army style. And he's like, well, you must be a cop. Look at your haircut. He's like, they must have cut your hair in the back of a squad car. He's like, what's wrong with my haircut? It's a normal man's haircut. This over and over again.
That is funny. That part is funny. So as far as your favorite character is Hunter.
Yeah. Like I said, though, he doesn't have the funniest interaction in this movie. But yes, he's the best character of them all. I don't know, John Cena's kid, what's her name?
It's funny, I don't know the names.
The Indian lady, the Indian girl?
Angelica? Angie, maybe they call her?
That might be right.
It is not. That's the girl that, never mind, sorry. I should have written these names down, but.
Yeah, we're doing terrible.
Just say his daughter for now.
Yeah, so his daughter is, she might be the best overall character, but like I said, the one you're going to relate to the most, especially as a parent.
Oh, is, Marcy.
No, that's the wife.
Is that the wife?
That's his wife. It's definitely Hunter. Definitely Hunter there. So, I don't know. I did like this movie quite a bit, but I had problems with it, man. As a parent, like, I look at it going, no human being should have this kind of interaction with another person. And again, though, there was some violence against high school age children. Like, I'm pro. I'm all about that. Definitely all about it.
One 17-year-old gets thrown through a wall by John Cena. And then nothing happens, no legal recourse.
No repercussions.
No one's mad at anybody.
Zero. Oh,
zero. Man. I mean, as a matter of fact, he then talks with his daughter, has a heart-to-heart, right after he throws her boyfriend through a...
Oh, yeah, they have their best interaction of the entire movie.
Which I was hoping wasn't going to be as it was, but, it, I mean, it was going to go in a different direction. But that's unfortunate that it doesn't. But, I mean, the movie's not going to end without everything fixed, which is exactly how it ends. Everything is fixed. If that's a surprise, then it shouldn't be, but...
I don't know. I didn't get the idea that everything was fixed.
What's
but
not
it's,
fixed?
Well, I mean... Don't really want to ruin everything about the
Fair.
Movie.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's definitely still... Not everything is right in the parents' mind.
No, you're right about that.
So...
We get to this one hilarious part. I just want to... Roger's probably not wrong, and might be the funniest part of the movie. It might be one of the funniest parts in any movie, actually, because it's so awkward. they get word that their kids will be at an after party at a house. And so they go to this house, and the first one to look in the window, of course, is Hunter, the parent they don't like. And he said, don't look in the window, don't look in this window, don't look in this window, and of course...
So everybody looks in the window, because you have to. So what's happening in that window?
Gary Cole is having sex with his wife, Gina Gershon. Gary Gershon's character, and go ahead, Rob, you tell them.
Okay, so this scene plays out
where they are just going at it on this couch, right?
Like teenagers.
Yeah, like teenagers on prom night. Like dressed up in a, he's wearing a tuxedo, she's wearing a prom dress. No, for real, because they get into this because they have some sort of prom night role play.
But they're married, so...
It's fine. Yeah, it actually, yeah. way it gets explained is actually, I get it, fine. So, as Gary Cole's character climaxes, he looks out the window and locks eyes with John Cena, Mitch. Locks eyes with him. John Cena freaks out. He's like, he locked eyes with me as he finished. He locked eyes. So he just runs away. He's like, this isn't right. This isn't right. He freaks out. Because now, obviously, everybody knows what there's people outside the window watching. So they come to the door for an interaction. And it just leads to more part of the story. But it's very funny. You find out about how that family's very open about sex and... that's the other one where they
which is
said
how they choose to be parents, which is
fine. How they choose to be parents, which is fine, which is also why that he learned that they trust their kid and their kid trusts them with everything, and it's they're the complete opposite of the three people that are chasing their kids around. So,
and I like how he makes such a big deal about that, but that not 5 minutes movie time later, he's got a bong in his butthole chugging beer.
Yeah,
but
chugging
that was funny beer. Because when they have that, when they insert it. And then when he's like, is he's in pain, like, just dump it in. And Hunter's like, we have an IPA, we have a Bud Light. What do you want?
No, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. So that's kind of, I mean, you see that from the trailer, but I found it funny still how that scene plays out.
Was that scene, like, much better, and was there funnier stuff that happened?
It wasn't really funnier. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's longer. It's definitely longer, but it's...
But the trailer, you see everything.
It's pretty much it. Yeah. So... Again, though, something you're supposed to find slapstick hilarious.
Which is still funny when he farts out the beer and it goes up and
sprays Hunter directly in the face.
That part is still funny. As they're running from the cops trying to hide, Hunter's like, I gotta... He's like, anybody have mouthwash? I need mouthwash right now.
Right now.
I need to go to a hospital right now.
Yeah, he's like, all this terrible stuff is happening. He's like, I have to go to the hospital right now.
But again, if you're not paying attention, you miss that comedy gold by, you know, Hunter. Which I think is such a strong asset in this movie. One of the few strong assets in this movie. One of the funniest moments I thought was... No one else was laughing, Leslie Mann's character, Lisa, finds herself in the same room that her daughter is going through his virginity. When her daughter walks in, she hides, naturally. She doesn't want to be caught. And then she's under the bed, and then...
Which, hold on. Did you look at it when they pan and she's hiding under the bed? And I just went, why?
Well,
no.
Most questions you ask in comedies are, why is it playing out like that? Like, it's because it has to be funny. But
it wasn't funny. It was dumb as hell.
It was dumb as hell, but she's like ninja-ing.
That's a good statement.
And she ends up behind this massive TV on a nightstand. And like they're going out in the bed, and they look over for a second, and then it's nothing. And they go back to what they were doing. And then she
hits the wires and it sparks.
It sparks. She falls to the ground like limp and lifeless, like she could be dead.
It is kind of funny. Well, the funnier part that I found about that is when she gets back up. No, she gets back up and like her hands are like locked in, like little velociraptor hands, because she's still shaking from the electricity. Like legitimately got zapped. Yeah. That was actually pretty funny.
That's actually one of the. And then it shows you the camera from their point of view, and you see her roll from behind one thing to another. I just think that's funny. That's just...
Again, though, one thing I looked at it going, this is completely unnecessary.
But it's one of the funniest parts of the movie. I really enjoyed Cockwalkers. If you have any inkling of seeing it, especially if you have a movie pass, definitely see it. You'll laugh. You will absolutely laugh, and at very awkward things. So that bothers
me. Well, hold on. I don't know if you'll laugh at the very awkward things, because you have to pay attention to see them. Because you do.
Point.
You need to be more observant in watching this movie. Like, I can't wait till I watch this movie a second time to see what I missed.
Exactly. I want to see the special features. I want to see the outtakes and the bloopers.
Oh, see, okay. Are you a little bit surprised they didn't have, like, a blooper reel at the end of this movie? I was really, like, I waited for a while to see if they were going to roll some stuff. Because there are parts of this movie you're like, okay, they probably did that take 5 different times with 12 different lines. Just ripping them off one at a time, and people just cracking up. And they didn't have that here. I thought that was a little bit weird.
They might be, some studios might make that decision to sell the Blu-ray and DVD. They gotta have the blooper reel there.
Yeah.
Because after you see a comedy once or twice in the theater, do you really want to spend $20 buying it again?
Yeah. I mean, comedy is a hard sell the second time around.
It's very hard sell.
Yeah.
But so that's, I really liked Conk Blockers. I thought it was funny, good characters. Well, one, at least one good character, other okay characters, but a good cast. And
so if you had to pick a number between 1 and 10, what do you give it? 10 being the funniest comedy you've ever seen, 1 being the worst, obviously.
6.5.
6.5? I was going to give it a straight 5.
Give it a straight 5. 6.5 isn't bad for me.
I would give it one thumbs up. I mean, listen, it's funny. It's got really funny moments. It just, everybody, like, this movie was too hyped up for me to be super funny. And honestly, the trailer hurts it. I think the trailer hurts it a lot.
Trailers hurt most movies. I mean, let's be honest about that.
Sure.
Trailer hurts most movies. Moving on to the movie of the week, Quiet Place. Fan Love Simon has some competition for one of the best movies of the year so far.
No, it doesn't.
You don't think?
No.
You don't think Quiet Place was that good?
Nope, because I watched the entire movie, Quiet Place.
Oh, but last 35
seconds. The last 35 seconds is taken out right off the table, homie.
The last 35 seconds movie bugged me so much, and we're not ruining anything. There's no way you can pull anything for that. But that's... Now, the following is going to... I know it's a horror movie. I know people are hyped up about this. It's been good money. If you haven't seen it, you want to see it. But if you haven't seen it, please stay tuned for this. We're going to talk about... We're not going to spoil anything major. No major spoilers that you wouldn't see, that you wouldn't pick up on watching the movie regularly anyway. So, with that said, that in mind, guys, you want to give me your...
Go ahead, Nick. You had to sit there idly for a while.
I thought the movie was pretty amazing, from the setting, the scenes, how it had almost no dialogue. I mean, it's kind of hard to pull off a movie like that, but John Krasinski sure does it. And, I mean, in a world gone silent, who will sound the horn to save everyone, you know? Who's that gonna be? But this movie, it was great from everything. You know, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the last 35 seconds, as you've said, maybe it's not the best, but...
It just...
I mean...
It was unnecessary.
Extremely unnecessary. Especially after what they've just been through, it seemed a little out of place.
Mm-hmm.
So, we start... How about that opening scene? I thought that was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
The thing about that is, if you're a fan of horror movies, you wouldn't know that scene wasn't part of The Walking Dead or a zombie movie. They're just trying to not make noise and get what they need out of this already ransacked, like, general goods store.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, there's no dialogue.
Also, nothing. Was weird, though, because apocalyptic survival, they're on day, what, almost 90?
I think they were at that 80
something, right?
Yeah, 80.
So, we're basically 3 months in. There's a lot of medication hanging out at that place, man. What's up with that?
There was a lot of stuff on shelves I don't think would have been there 3 months into whatever was going on.
What? Medication should be the first thing you take. Always. That and water.
Well, they gotta be careful. Again, medication makes noise. Like, you don't really get the severity of how quiet they have to be until the end of this first 5 minutes.
Sure,
season.
Yeah, that's fair.
But you've seen the trailer, and I mean, to be fair, but the scene is set so well here by... They're walking around. No one's got shoes on either. I found that was a cool choice.
Mm-hmm.
No shoes. No shoes at all. I really enjoyed that.
What were they walking on?
Sand.
Sand? Okay. Sand. That's what I thought.
Would have meticulously, like, taken months and months to, like, make paths to their farm. So, it was sand. So, rounding out the opening scene is, you see, it's what, maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Probably 7 minutes or so.
7 minutes. They're looking for medication. There's no dialogue whatsoever.
Nope.
No dialogue at all.
All sign language is subtitled.
Yep.
And it was great. It's great.
It really was.
Oh, one premise to this movie, or one thing, preface to this movie, is if you're not ready to read subtitles, don't see this movie.
Well, they're not as many subtitles.
I don't know, man.
You have to read it maybe a dozen times.
When there's subtitles, there needs to be subtitles.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But that shouldn't stop you from watching the movie. It really shouldn't.
I just don't want people to be surprised.
I can understand that. So we're ransacking the store, getting what they need, and it's really great here how we have so much character development without any dialogue.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. As we have this one kid who's sick, sitting against the wall, he's sick, he doesn't feel good, and his mother, Emily Blunt's character, Evelyn Abbott, is looking around the medicine, picking up bottles very slowly to not make the sound.
Slightest noise.
Absolutely no noise can be made. And it's because she looks back at her son and just, you see what's going on, is you see the dynamic of this family is they have several kids. One is sick. They're not wearing shoes. They're not making any noise. It'd be interesting to watch this movie if someone's like, you know what? Sit down, watch this movie. No promotional stuff whatsoever. No trailers you didn't see. Nothing. I think that's the way to watch this movie. But it's
impossible
might be, these
days. That would be different. But I think you'd like it more that way, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And the youngest son picks up an airplane, like a toy airplane.
Space shuttle.
With, well, they bring the rocket, the reference back later. And with batteries, and Krasinski's character, the father, Lee Abbott, he takes it away and just, you know, shakes his head and, you know, does sign language.
Takes the batteries out. Very
slowly, puts them on the counter, and then they leave. And the older daughter, because it's only one daughter, but she picks up the plane, the rocket, the shuttle, and gives it back to him, and then he picks up the batteries. Mm-hmm. And then you've seen the scene in the trailer. They're walking in the woods back to their little city they built, inhabitants they built. And he puts the batteries in, and the starts making noise like a spaceship would. And Emily Blunt's character turns around. She's holding a sick kid. She can't do anything about it. She's holding someone. And you see Krasinski's character just...
Dead sprint,
beeline it, try to get him. And you see all the thing running. And also, this thing is moving fast, whatever it is. And then he doesn't get there. And then we go, after that happens, after this
one
thing...
One calendar year later,
we resume. They're still kind of destroyed by losing that child. But that's where the movie picks up is... But that opening scene is so good itself.
It was kind of heartbreaking for Lee Abbott to take away a toy from his son.
Oh, yeah, it's hard.
But it's for the greater good. In reality,
there's so little to do if you're...
The kid's maybe 4 years old. He doesn't understand why he can't have that.
Yeah.
Where it's been clear for the past 3 months that if you make noise, or 3 months or so, if you make noise, you're going to die.
Yeah.
Things are bad in the world, man.
There's a lot of, there's a lot of small things in this movie that you can either catch or you won't catch, like, newspapers that will, like,
they kind of tell you the story of briefly what happened. They don't go into detail at all, but...
I kind of wish there was a little bit more of that. Just wee little... Like, if there was, 2 minutes more of that sort of stuff, like the pan across the newspapers and the... Or, you know, like a clip headline. You know, do you remember Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah.
The one where they shot up in Pittsburgh or whatever, where they keep seeing flashes of stuff on the news of what's happening. That's kind of where they're getting their news from. You don't see any of that here.
What, you mean the Zack Snyder one from 2005-ish?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Or you see, a two-minute clip of what's going on the news, like, hey, everybody's dead, this is what you gotta do. Like, I wish there was something... Now, obviously, it doesn't have to be like that. I wish there was something like that in this movie. Yeah. Just get a little bit more backstory. That's just for me personally. It doesn't hurt the movie that it's not.
Very, very true. I totally agree with you because, I mean, there is a lot of questions. I mean, but what can you do? It seems like the Earth was just ransacked by aliens.
Well, even if you watch the movie in its entirety, you still don't know exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the coolness of it.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something that, by the end of the movie, you're like, okay, you don't know what's going on, but you know where they're going after the movie. Mm-hmm. So,
I don't... excuse me for clearing my throat. The strength in a horror movie is the less you show, the more you give your audience.
The scarier it can be.
The scarier it is. Which this movie kind of sacrifices that right off the bat as far as the creature is concerned. Because you see it kind of early. And after you see it, it takes... You know, it was so scary in the first scene because as... It's funny, the one time, like a 2 second cut, you see Krasinski, as he's dead sprinting towards his son to try to get his son before this thing does. You see him, as the camera is very quickly, moving with him as he's running. You see the thing in the background, running faster at a much quicker pace. And, you can't really see what it is. And then the shot is, you see the bridge dead center, and then you, Krasinski's character running, his life depended on it. And then this thing just, it literally moves in a wide shot, screen left to right, in 1 second. Grabbing the kid. And then black. Cut. Yeah. Which also, if you remember, I assume a lot of people who are listening to this have seen it, is it obviously didn't care about them.
No, because they were quiet.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, even throughout the whole movie, we learn small things about this creature. And it's crazy, you know, and I mean, it's throughout the movie. you know, whether it's the daughter's earpiece because I believe she's her deaf.
She's really deaf.
Oh, really?
I don't know. She's got a cochlear implant mm-hmm. that can actually help pick up sound and on some levels is what that is, which comes into play a lot during this movie.
Which, as someone who sometimes needs to wear a hearing aid myself, everything that goes on with her hearing aid, like the high-pitched squealing, that is real. That is very real. I've, at times in my life, had to wear one because I don't have great hearing, and sometimes like my allergy is so bad I have to wear one. But that is very true. And there'll be times, I remember... And at Marquee, actually, I was working with, remember Justin, Justin Long, I was working with him, and he's like, I hear a high pitch, what is that? I'm like, oh crap, it's this thing, like I was embarrassed. And he's like, no, don't be embarrassed, just please be aware that it doesn't make noise.
You're humming at a loud rate.
But like, that is really, that does really happen, so those of you thinking, oh, it's a plot point, well, not really, because it does happen.
No, I mean, any small feedback loop can make a lot of screeching noise.
Yeah,
and that's kind of a big factor in... I mean, I don't want to call it like it's the signs, like the water thing on the signs.
Well, that's when I was watching the movie, that's exactly what I thought.
But 365 days, as we see several times, 365 days and like 390 some days into it, for people not to make that connection and somehow we go into, fairly early in the film, where he doesn't want his kids to go into is kind of like command center.
It is like a command center.
He's trying to figure things out. He has written on the board like, skin impenetrable, what is their weakness? To be this long into something like this and not know that, I think to me is like, that's so weird.
Well, I actually have a small counter to that is maybe people do know, but they don't. Because... Mm-hmm. They're effectively cut off. Like, the one thing they do show over him, he's going through all the international channels on his giant ham radio that he's got built, doing the SOS, and nobody's answering. But you know there are other people alive out there during the scene when they're on top of the silo and they light the fire and they look around the valley.
Yeah, which is brilliant, by the way. That really was very cool.
But see, I have a problem with that, though. Okay? So they light that fire. Okay, and there are other people around, at least somebody tending a fire to know that, hey, all clear up here, all clear. When these people get in trouble, no one comes.
Well, how would you make the slightest sound in the woods, you're dead.
Then why even signal other people?
You're right.
You have to have some sort of community for something. Like, they're doing that for something, right? Or you just one day do you just not see the fire up there and assume that the whole family is dead? Like, I don't understand that.
You'd almost have to assume that.
I'm not saying that they have to come and help them. But they light this fire. They get back on top of it during one of their peak times of crisis and light that fire. And the other ones don't light up.
Well, as long as they don't light up, that's not even a concern for us at the camera. Because the camera, like, the kids aren't looking out. When they're on top of the silo and they're in a lot of trouble, light the fire, they're not looking on the horizon. They're looking for their father to come get them.
Sure, which is fine. But I think you could have done, like, the camera pan. And there could be like a fire, like a little orange glow in the corner, like knowing that, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
And they don't do that.
No, they don't. And as a matter of fact, the daughter would have been, as they lit that fire, the first thing she would have done is look the horizon and try to see. Mm-hmm. Because I assume that if you light it at dusk before the sun goes down, you're fine.
That's an all clear, right?
If you light it at night, you're probably in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, and then they flick on these things, which is all from the trailer, the giant red lights stating something's going on. Okay. Then they set off the giant fireworks bomb, which is all part of the trailer. Again, nothing. Now, I don't care how far away you are. Dude, they light the sky up.
Yeah.
All those encampments would have absolutely known.
Something was going on. Something is happening, right?
And also something is, we see this spider web of like pathways that they have built, and like they keep refreshing with sand so they can keep walking on it. You'd think that there would, like, the first thing you do is connect your path
to somebody else's.
One or another, just so you have, if nothing else, a trade route.
Exactly.
Or a fallback place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, dude, my farm is done. Yeah. I need to follow this path to my fallback location. Now, they're 18 months into this, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Dude, this is terrible prep. Terrible.
That's why I kept thinking to myself is they have all this time. They have no solutions for anything.
Well, even the thing with the ham radio, and the only thing I could consider with the ham radio is they don't have a lot of information because he's not getting internationally. Now, are you telling me that no one else in this valley has a radio?
Yeah.
Or any information to give them?
Right, something. Something. Now,
in this movie, it doesn't matter that they don't. But if there was ever going to be, like, a bigger picture of this movie, you need something along that line. Like, there is a big disconnect. Like, once the bad stuff happens, they're on their own. And they very well might have been. But they make it a point early on in this movie to show that there are other people out there alive and surviving.
Yeah.
Why do that if you're not going to have anything along that line?
And also, last thing I want to mention before we get into the wonderful scenes of these people evading these creatures very close proximity, which is one, I mean, my heart was pounding.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when they have that baby. Oh my God. Which is a question in itself, why would you go full term? Why wouldn't you do something to not go full term?
She's not full term. She's got a couple of weeks left at least.
Yeah, she had like.
But it doesn't matter. At that point, you have to, when you discover you're pregnant, the decision needs to be made then and there. We have to terminate somehow because the baby cries. You cannot cry in this world.
Yeah. No, see, you're looking at it wrong, man. They look at it as you need this. You have to keep the species going.
Need to rebuild.
Well, I get that, but how do you stop the baby from crying?
Dude, they built it. They build the space where they can't hear them. Right, like, yeah. They literally accomplished everything they wanted to do, and it all goes to shit.
That they can't.
Well, they don't.
Because when they're talking and nothing's coming to attack them, they're surprised that it's working, which means they haven't tested it.
Well,
because
they weren't supposed to have yet.
Yeah,
because she is multiple weeks early.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're gambling. It's effective at gambling.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you think you have time, you need to use all of your time.
Yeah.
Everything they do in this movie is calculated. Like, from sunup to sundown, they have time frames that they got to be filling in.
Mm-hmm.
So from the line, let me ask you this. From the line on the wall, he has written down, how do you kill these things? Then it says, skin impenetrable, 3! So you are going to take the shotgun he has. They've somehow discovered that. So that, I'm asking you, so the shotgun they have is now ineffective against these things. That's what you guys take from seeing on his command center board, skin impenetrable. That's what you're taking from this. So they have things that make noise. Why not make traps for these things? Try to kill them. Like, that's what I don't get.
That's interesting.
You're right about lack of prep. There is a complete lack of prep on these people's part. Not that makes the movie any less good.
Now that I'm breaking it down more, the more I think about it, like, they're kind of dumb.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's weak.
They're just unprepared.
When you say something about setting trap, that does make sense. Why wouldn't they?
But you know what, though? I'm a nerd like that, and I've seen every one of these, like, apocalyptic movies. I mean, like, dude, you're it so far in. You should have this done, this done, this done, this done. What are you doing, bro? Like, what's up?
And
where's your ditch? Where's your boat from the zombies? Where's it?
Granted, the biggest problem in this movie is you can't make a sound.
Actually, and, I think it's kind of... I think that forced Krasinski to be very creative as a director.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we definitely see that through their facial expressions.
Sure.
And, I mean, just how they're handling themselves on screen. It's amazing, but it's just... I don't know. It seems like it would be tough to do anything in that kind of world without making a sound. I mean, they do a good job of trying not to make a sound, but...
And as we're going to get into talk to right now is their interactions with these things. Once it gets to the point where it starts, once those lights go red, this movie just does not stop.
No, it gets pretty intense.
One precarious situation after another, and they keep finding ways to... Which, but like, my heart was pounding the whole time. Mm. It's funny. I was sitting on the extreme left, the top row extreme left, one of the only seats left, and I looked down the row to see, and there was, like, 5 or 6 people doing what I was doing. Like, the edge of their seat, like, glued. Nothing could have torn them away from what's going on. And that way, John Krasinski, as director, succeeded admirably. Yeah. I have to say that.
Before we get into that, one scene that I just thought was absolutely beautiful was when Emily Blunt and John Krasinski are in the basement, and it's
the
before everything.
Scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're
dancing.
They got
too.
The iPod.
That's pretty brilliant. That's definitely a Grayson scene.
Yeah,
it's like well, there's still that degree of normalcy for them.
Yeah,
it's like they still are keeping the romance alive
mm-hmm.
after everything that's happened. You know, so. Or do you want anything that before we get into
No, I have a couple. Like, my favorite scene in this movie, and the one you guys just mentioned is probably one of the top ones in this movie. But my favorite one is when he's with his son and they go to the river.
Yeah.
Okay. And John Krasinski's character makes noise and the kid freaks out. And Lee is not concerned
mm-hmm.
because he's been there a bunch of times. It seems to me this is the kid's first trip down to the river, okay? And stuff's happening,
and the river makes a lot of noise, like
the waterfall.
So they get to the river, and the one thing you notice in the theater, because the theater had been primarily basically dead quiet to this point, when the camera switches and the scene changes to where they're coming up on the river, it's loud. Mm-hmm. River's making noise. Like, we're in nature film level loud.
Oh, yeah, like someone put the mic right next to the water,
right?
And that's the soundtrack they use.
And that's and I actually like that a lot, because they went from where everything's really tense and quiet, and now they're out in the world and something's making noise, and now they can make a little bit of noise, and the kid freaks out, and he has to show them that, hey, when you're right here in this area, sound doesn't matter.
As long as something's making a louder noise.
Really sets the tone for later on in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, he takes the kid up to this big waterfall, and it's really loud there, and he's like, woo, yelling and echoing, and like, it helps the kid, like, de-stress. Like, you can see the tension level on him at least drops a little bit. And like, that's a dad moment right there, man. Like, he showed his son, like, hey, you don't have to worry about everything right this very second.
Yeah.
And like, to me, that was a really good connection scene.
That's where everything, before that's where everything kicks off, because then she, well, there's obvious, as I mentioned before, in the opening scene, the daughter is the one that gives the boy back the rocket ship, and then he grabs the batteries, but she gave him back, so there's an element of who's to blame for what happened. And of course, she thinks she is to blame, and everyone hates her. No one does. It's just
the son thinks that the dad blames her, and he says that he doesn't. But clearly, he harbors something. He's upset. Mm-hmm. His kid's gone, man, and that sucks.
I mean, you can't have conversations about it. No. You can't talk about it.
No.
And so that's what I think one of the stronger points here is. What I think the climactic scene in this is kind of weak, given the lead up. I think is kind of weak. Again, it's because I'm sitting in there thinking, they could have done that, They have options here. But, like, I understand I'm not in the situation. These things are trying to rip my throat out. I get that. Mm-hmm. I do. But so going back a little bit to, there are these wonderfully tense moments when these things are literally within feet of our people. And, like, when Emily Blunt's character, when their safe haven is flooded, and that thing is down there with her, and she's carrying the baby. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, that was very stressful.
That's intense. The other scenario too, when she has the egg timer.
Oh yeah.
And it's ticking down, and it's like freaking out. Yeah, that's it was.
Oh, where she sets the timer, so she
gets sets the timer, and then she walks around the corner, and then slowly up, and it goes off, and the thing just starts tearing the hell out of that room.
Oh, that damn nail too.
Like that made me cringe.
Yeah, that was especially. No, she didn't make a sound.
Okay, so you know what really bothered me about that scene, at least the lead up to it, when you see that nail pop up, and I looked at it going, "That's so bad."
Yeah,
like you it's know,
just, it's just straight
they
up.
Draw you
know,
attention
and the
to
whole
it.
Time they're all barefoot, and I'm like, "No, no,
you know what's
because
gonna happen?"
That oh man, painful memories of doing something along that line when I was a little kid.
I did the same thing. I had the same. The same thing happened to me. I accidentally stepped on a nail.
Mm-hmm. But that has to go through. You have a bone in your foot.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to go through. As far as she put weight on that foot.
That was at least like an inch.
That was full on.
4 or 5 inches.
It's not that long, but it's long enough that it would do serious foot damage.
Yeah.
And you would audibly swear.
Well, she doesn't. And even in the childbirth sequence, which I gotta, in the trailer it shows her in a tub, like, trying not to scream, and then this creature's hand comes right next to her. It's in the movie, it's kind of in the hallway, down the hallway a little bit. It's like the element of, like, the close danger they did for the trailer. But in that situation where she is trying to not only stay away from this thing and give birth at the same time.
Silently.
I mean, any of you have... I mean, Roger, you were there, I'm sure, when your daughter was born. Birth is not a silent thing.
It is not. It is not silent.
It is not silent. So, and then when the sound that draws them away from her finally goes off, she just lets out this...
just scream.
Oh. And then, of course, Kosinski is just all worried about where is she. And that's a wonderful... That sequence is quite wonderful. And then even then... when they have a moment of downtime, it just immediately picks up again. And there's like 40 minutes of complete tense, you know, your heart is beating. And the moments where, did you notice several moments where these things were close, you heard the, like one of the sound effects was like a, like supposed to be, I think, a beating heart.
Mm-hmm.
Of like their hearts beating so hard, it's, you know, it's I think that thought that was a cool, you know, ambient sound as well.
And that's one thing this movie does is it gets the sound so right and so spot on.
Well, horror is all about sound. Mm-hmm. Horror movies are all about sound.
Building the suspense and whatnot. One thing that I absolutely hate, and it's coming back to the whole, you know, we should have a community thing. It's when they are coming back to the camp, and it's just Lee and his son, and they run into the old man.
Yeah.
Who seemed to have either...
I thought that was a weird scene.
It really was. And, you know, I
get no backstory on that either. You don't, like, hey, that's so-and-so. Nope, here's a dead body. Nope, here's a guy screaming.
The point is she's freshly dead. They just
caught her. Yeah, something just happened.
And then...
But again, then what the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's the scene that I don't know why it's in there.
It's supposed to... I think that scene is supposed to make sure that you understand how close one of them actually is in the proximity. Okay. And that... to really put into mind like what they can do to a human being. Mm-hmm. Well, because you don't see it up to that point, then you see them get tore up.
Yeah.
But it's also a precursor to the climax. Like, it's also a very big, because those two characters, as you just mentioned, they're walking back and they see that. Both of them see that, both of them interpret it their own way, especially Krasinski's character as the father, as the protector of his wife and his kids. That plays a much bigger role later I think he really understands what has to be done later, and that's at the ending, that's I think where that comes from, is kind of, although I think whatever message he was trying to get across there was not translated, didn't come across well.
Mm-hmm.
as a filmmaker, I don't think that scene, if you took that scene completely out of this movie, would it change anything? Like those 2 minutes.
No,
not to me. Yeah, I don't think so.
But here's the thing, though. I don't know if it. I don't think it hurts the movie. Mm-hmm. I just don't see the why or the justification to have it in there. I honestly think it helps you understand that what this little kid is going through.
Yeah,
because it's another one of the scenes where he just had a good day with his dad and everything is good. Hey, we're walking home. It's starting to get dark and everything's about to go to shit again. Yeah. Like, literally, I think that's what it is. Because, like, the kid's got a smile on his face. They got a backpack full of fish. All this gear, all this stuff they've collected. Everything is good. And then 2 minutes of just absolutely terrible stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that was to make sure, hey, we're not going to get too happy in this movie and we're going to slam you right back down.
Well, you got to keep the plot moving. It can't just be, oh, they're rebuilding. Like, something has to go wrong to keep the plot moving. So, and that way I'm kind of glad it happened. Is there anything else you guys want to mention that's not spoilery?
There was one thing which I couldn't... I want to say that... I couldn't tell from the photos inside the house. But was that their farmhouse, do you think?
I don't know, okay.
I
think maybe it was, but they don't really...
Nobody to know.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
because if it's not, obviously they've been there a long time, but it's established. Like, I mean, there are some of their photos are on the wall and stuff like that. So the only thing I can say is maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But if you literally can't make sound, you'd spend all day doing something.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I mean, you're right. I mean, I don't. Is it important if it's theirs or not?
No, I don't know.
It just kind of bothered me.
But see, I think to Nick's point is that's one thing that they don't explain anything of. But like, hey, this is where we're from. The other thing that I have a problem with now that I'm thinking about it. Where do they have power?
Mm. Can't run a loud generator.
Is there a generator running somewhere?
That's a good point. That's a loud ass
thing. Yeah.
Generators are loud.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is there still an electrical grid?
Mm.
I mean, because there could be, maybe. But the town sure didn't have any power.
Well, yeah, but you're right. Yeah, I mean, it was a very much a Walking Dead town with zero power whatsoever. But you're right. Where the hell did the power come from? That's very, interesting. That's a very good point.
Right, because there's definitely not a generator. If there's a generator, it's ultra quiet. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, they make them. I mean, maybe it's solar. I don't know, but they don't ever say that. It could absolutely be solar.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it would have taken 5 seconds of screen time to answer that question.
Just to have
a couple of solar panels.
That's a big question right there.
Where's the power coming from? How do you have power where no one else does?
Because it's not only do they have power, I mean, they have a whole elaborate light system.
Yeah.
And they're communicating through fire.
A big ham radio. I mean...
The ham radio thing would be very, very important in that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
I
mean, don't get me wrong. I absolutely enjoyed this movie. I loved it, but...
It's funny to say that, and then we're just tearing it apart.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm more critical on movies that should be better.
Mm-hmm.
Then, I mean, do you remember that? Did you watch that movie maybe somewhat, maybe 8 to 12 months ago? The other one, like set in the woods, post-apocalyptic, The Other Family, with Joel Edgerton. It Comes at Night.
No, I don't think I did. No.
You should definitely watch that one. That one is like this one, it's so good up to a point. It's like, not last 35 minutes.
No, see, this one's really good like all the way through.
Yeah.
And then...
So I think we can agree the big misses are no explanation of where the power's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
No neighboring, no communication after the initial, we're lighting a fire, everything's okay. No communication with them, no one comes to help, they don't go to help anybody. So, but if you're going to go with the theme of the baby's so important because you have to care on the species, then you have to go with the theme of you have to help each other.
You have to have some sort of community. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, as we're breaking it down a little bit, I think thinking more like, damn, that makes me mad.
That made for a much better movie, I think.
And not that I'm thinking about it. I mean, they were surrounded by fire. I mean, we see that in the...
Well, yeah, it's very Lord of the Rings-ish, where fire to communicate.
Yeah. And I mean, how far is the town? How far are they out of the town? And how far are they to other people? Because it seemed pretty close.
You know what would have even been good when they were in town and they were leaving? Would have been good is like, as they were that shot when the camera was like kind of panning up, you know, watching them walk away. Mm-hmm. Like, they met, like, they quickly, like, they someone else would walk in with a backpack and, like, then Krasinski and this guy would, like, trade
like,
stuff.
Yeah, or, like, okay. like a signature, like a hand signal, and then they keep going on their way, like, a, hey, what's up? Yeah. We're out of here.
Yeah, like, or like, hey, what's up?
Or like,
there's still medicine.
Yeah, or like like an all clear sign, like nothing to see.
Yeah.
But you know what? Again, damn it, God, why would that happen?
As I'm thinking about this too, though, is we said that the other community thing couldn't help you. That's not even true. Like, they send these rockets up, so everybody would know. Okay, so wouldn't you know after somebody else sent their rockets up, maybe they need help. Maybe I should go set off something somewhere else
to draw them
away.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Man.
Yeah, so maybe this movie's a little worse than I thought. Congratulations, Love, Simon. You win again.
Yeah. Bless.
Bless, Simon.
No, but it's okay. Seriously, though, I really did like this movie. Yeah. And okay, I've mentioned this many times before. I am not a horror movie, scary movie kind of guy. It's not the emotion I want to let out of me in a movie theater. If I had to pick anything between pumped up from an action movie or happy from a comedy, being frightened would be the bottom thing I'd want on my list. It's not something that I like. And I really enjoyed this movie. I really, really did. I think if you have the expectation that you want to be a little bit frightened, you should go see this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a good movie regardless. I mean, wonderful cast. Blunt, I think, is at her best.
Oh, man.
No, he's at his best. Krasinski's at his best here, man. You see him without talking to be crazy emotional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
it's the eyes, man.
She has the advantage of going through the whole childbirth thing. Like that, there are not many women who could have done that very well as she did. So we're all agreeing. I mean, we all agree that that's a pretty good movie.
Yes.
Now, as we talk about things, maybe not as great as we thought. Okay, if we're moving on a little bit. Moving on to the... You know, one story I want to go through. We didn't do news stories, although there's not much news this week. But one news story I did want to talk about is Krasinski did consider putting as another hurdle for these people bodily noises, you know, farting or burping, or because you I mean you make the slightest noise, these things find you. So like, wouldn't
you
that
roll
be?
Over and fart in your sleep and you get torn apart? Who hasn't done that?
And then laughed at it,
right?
So I thought it was interesting that he actually considered putting that, like, he actually considered making those part of the script, which is, I mean, it's probably the right choice to ultimately not, because it's a waste of time, but. I mean, I could. If he did it, I wouldn't have been mad. It would have
been interesting to see how that would have played in. Definitely.
Or like toilet flushing or whatever they had, like sanitation.
No, because dude, you're pooping outside. Yeah.
Fair, okay.
I mean, she gave birth. You think they have a toilet? She gave birth in a bathtub.
Fair, okay. So for the Clark Hayes movie, I wanted to go with something. And I talked over some people, and I think I want to go with Night of the Living Dead. Only because when that came out, that was terrifying to people. Even though we watch it now, we're like, how is this scary? Like, the zombies move an inch an hour.
It was the first of their time, right?
Well, it was the first.
It was the first.
Yeah.
For those that are local to Pittsburgh, Romero is a Pittsburgh guy. Mm-hmm. He shoots a lot of stuff in Pittsburgh. This was shot in Pittsburgh. Well, Pennsylvania, I should say. Not Pittsburgh.
Western PA.
Western PA. But it's still cool to be local and know that. It's the movie that started it all. 1968, George Romero directed it. It made zombies It's terrifying for so many years. And it, again, it's like if you were a young kid in that scene, you watched that movie, you were terrified. Mm-hmm. You watch it now, and it's like, it's almost like, this is kind of a joke. But as far as the terror level.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we said, it was the first of its time, and it's kind of scary to see that, you know, to see horrors come to life, you know, dead people are chasing you, trying to eat you.
Well, of course.
That's just...
Well, let me pose you a question, because of all movies that don't generally hold up, well, horror movies usually don't age very well. So think about a horror movie, like an older one, that if you watch now would still like creep you out a little bit, to think about how good that movie actually has to be to still do that. Where you go and you watch Night of the Living Dead, you're like, okay, this is lame. I see better than this on Sunday nights on AMC. Mm-hmm. I mean, significantly better production value and all that stuff. Now, I know it's different because it's 50 years ago, mm-hmm. but you look at it now going...
50 years ago.
Yeah, literally 50 years ago. But like you go and you watch a movie like, for me, like Poltergeist. Okay, that movie can still creep me out.
Or Original Exorcist.
Right? Yeah. Like, can still, like, frighten you a little bit going, damn.
Terrifying. Mm-hmm.
And, like, those effects, they're not aging well, and it's still that frightening of a movie.
It is. But Night of the Living Dead is a very good movie. It's,
sure.
It's very simple. It, you know, it's also on the Criterion Collection. If you have not seen that, they have so many hours of special footage and, you know, interviews. And I think that's the most interesting thing, how you shoot a movie like that on a shoestring budget. You know, low effects, that kind of thing. You just use lighting well.
I love how that spawned, like, this whole world, the Living Dead world. Like, there's, like, 100 movies, man.
Yeah, man. Well, a lot of them by him.
Mm-hmm.
Either made by him or produced by Romero. So.
That's right.
And, of course, one of my favorite scenes is, I think the opening scene when they're in the a brother and sister in a graveyard, and he's making fun of his sister. They're coming to get you, Barbara. Like, that's
yeah.
that iconic line. And then... What really does come and get that?
Joke's on you, buddy.
But again, I recently watched on the Criterion Collection, and it's thinking to myself, how is this, like, this is not scary to me. But like, I understand the significance in its place in the world as far as film is concerned. But like, as I said, this Quiet Place is scary because those things, if you make one mistake, they kill you.
Yeah.
Like, there's just, you cannot make mistakes in that world presented to us by Krasinski. So, I mean, that's kind of going in the same vein as, like, that was terrifying to people then, but Quiet Place is terrifying to us now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I agree with you.
For the week.
yeah, I don't know. That's just such an iconic movie, to be honest.
It is very iconic. Well, thank you for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoyed Quiet Place and Cock Blockers. Hope you enjoy them. If you have movie pass, you have nothing to lose. If you have an evening by yourself, or just go with someone. You can catch the show on iTunes, Google Play, if you're an Android user. You can always automatically download it on iTunes. And you can download it directly from Podbean, where it's uploaded. Tons of episodes there if you want to look at some backlogged episodes. My name is Grayson Maxwell, one on Twitter.
And Moore1776.
And at Rod Stillion.
You can follow the show on Twitter at LoveCinemaPod. I tweet out links to trailers and stuff like that, so enjoy that. Try to keep everyone updated on cool trailers to watch. I'm going to start making a list of things we're going to talk about, so if you want to keep up, you can. Easy peasy. You can also check out the Facebook page by the same name as the show, For the Love of Cinema. On Fridays, I post the trailers for the new movies. On Tuesdays, you know, I post a link to the show so you can download it. All kinds of movie culture going up there, too. You guys have anything you want to add?
I do, actually. Before we get too close to it, remember, we're going to have a live episode in a couple of weeks. What's the date on that?
It is the week. It's the week after. Was it May 4th? It's
okay.
May 4th at Marquee Cinemas at 3 o'clock at the Highlands. We have a room picked out. Feel free to come be part of that. It'll be cool. We're going to have some pizza there for everyone, some drinks. Come check that out if you want to be part of a big episode. It's going to be the Marvel episode. You can rest assured, we're not talking about traffic that week.
No, and just remember, if you do want to come, make sure you let one of us know. That would make our lives easier.
Because
we have to set it up, so.
Yeah,
but it should be a good, interesting, we're going to try to start at 3, though we'll probably start a little bit after 3, but definitely come check it out if you're a fan. We're going to be, you don't have to be caught up completely on all the Marvel movies. I'm going to try to be.
I'll be doing that tonight. Start Iron Man tonight, buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
Nice.
Rogers,
that's right. Ready to roll.
Away. But But if you love movies and you love Marvel, come check us out. It's going to be a longer episode, probably two and a half hours. But I think it'll be a good one. I think there'll be a lot of... I know several people have already RSVP'd about coming, and they're very excited as well. So I'm happy to reach out to the community and bring in what few listeners want to come out. So
should be really cool. May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th indeed be with you.
Don't do that again.
Yeah. Don't do that again. Maybe the first time it was done was cool, but you just did it for the millionth time. So. All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a good evening.